Giles Abbott is an exceptional man. Not only is he the UK's only professional blind storyteller, but he's also the only Talking Books narrator that I know of who's registered blind. These two facts are not unconnected, as he told me when he came into the studio. And as with all good stories, romance lies at the heart of it. I'm delighted to be joined in the studio today by Giles Abbott, who is not only one of the RNIB Talking Books studio narrators, he is also Britain's only professional blind storyteller. But before we get onto that, Giles, welcome to the studio.
My pleasure.
So tell me, how did you start as a narrator at the Talking Books studio?
It's something I'd always wanted to do, and I used Talking Books very extensively for a number of years after my eyesight went wrong, which was in 1998. And I was always trying to find a way, and I came for an interview, and I brought the first chapter of Bleak House by Charles Dickens, printed out with 20-point font, and I did the audition, and the man who auditioned me, he said, "The trouble is, we can't record you in the studio with all that paper flapping around, so we had to find another way." And sometime later, I realized that I could get ebooks on a mobile phone, expand the font size hugely, and hold it to my nose practically. I think the first thing I recorded for RNIB was on a phone which no longer exists, because, I mean, they have a life of about 2 years, don't they? And I had to spend, every day recording with my eyes crossed, because I had to have it so close. It's got better since then. I can have the font that little bit bigger. In fact, now access to books, thanks to e-texts, etc., is almost as easy as it ever was, which is extraordinary.
And I believe the first book that you recorded was actually a Will Self book.
Yeah, I remember. Yes, it was, The Butt. Very interesting book.
And you've gone on to record Aesop's Fables, which I must say I've listened to with my children, which I thoroughly enjoyed.
Oh, good.
And
that's Chesterton's translation of Aesop, because, of course, we don't... Well, I don't read him in the original ancient Greek. And different translations will make quite a difference to how you perceive the author. But actually, an interesting point, because you may remember that at the end of every story, it says, "And the moral is..." Yeah. I hated doing that. Because as a storyteller, I think if the audience haven't got their own idea about it, then they've not been listening. And who am I to crash in and tell them what they should think?
And
however, I did learn something that actually, "and the moral is," it was never spoken in classical times. It was used as an index card system whereby orators who needed to find an Aesop story to illustrate a point in a speech could flip through looking for something on the moral of collaboration, thinking something on the moral of envy. And then they'd find the fable that they needed. So it was a filing system.
It was a search function.
Yeah, that exactly. Isn't that wonderful?
Oh, I learned something today, which is fantastic. So, and did the narration lead into a career of storytelling?
No, the other way around. I began telling stories. My eyesight went wrong in 1998. I began telling stories probably at the end of 1999. No, that was... I began telling stories in public at the end of 99. I began storytelling, although I didn't know that's what it was, pretty early on, to my wife. She used to love me to read her poetry when my eyes worked. My wife is dyslexic, and as is often the case with dyslexia, she is fabulously intelligent. A fact which was missed through much of her education, but not all of it. They caught up at last. She used to love me to read poetry and things to her, and of course I couldn't do that anymore. And who wouldn't miss doing something that their wife is happy when they do? So I began to remember, you know there are certain stories you go to when you're sick, when you're a child, certain favourites that you read again and again, and actually they become a bit of how you shape yourself. And so I began to think of the stories that I knew really, 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 really well, and I began to tell them to her, and some of them took weeks. Just, we'd do a chapter, well, not a chapter or so, but what I could remember in little sections at night and then go to sleep.
And are you blessed with a good memory? When you learn your stories, do they stick, or do you need to practice them to recall them?
You need to practice anything if you want to be good at it. I am blessed with a very good memory for words.
And so when you're narrating now, I know a lot of the other narrators mark up their texts in various colours and with pencil marks. Do you use a similar system, or do you just commit to memory where you need to use which voice for the text?
I do mark up, yes. Which, again, is something you can do now that e-text is available. There are programs whereby you can change the colour of things. But, yeah, because, I mean, sometimes when I'm reading, I've only got a maximum 7 to 12 words on a page. It's hard to scan ahead. The engineers get used to this. We do lots of drop-ins and pickups.
Right.
But, yeah, and it's about remembering the physical posture inside your face, inside your throat, for this or that character. I remember a few years ago, I recorded an audiobook for Audible, not for RNIB, in which the main character, it was a historical book, not a fictional one, but the main character was a very serious and rather earnest Victorian politician. And I got his voice by just pulling a certain face, a certain frown, and I found that it did something to the inside of my throat when I pulled a certain frown. And
if I do it now, then here he is. And I am looking at the state of Britain, by which I mean, of course, Greater Britain, Britain and her overseas dominions, and
you know, that kind of thing, and you just pull a face.
I see a great future for you as the Foreign Secretary, actually, Giles.
Oh, God. No, I'm a storyteller, not an outright Latin. Stop it.
And I should have laughed. I've completely forgotten my place.
Giles Abbott is momentarily discombobulated. Red Zell.
they might not even cut this bit out. So are you a great fan of audiobooks yourself, or do you still try and read them visually?
I used to be a huge fan of audiobooks. I still am. And when my eyesight first went, I was also physically very ill and very disabled for quite some time, so the RNIB Talking Book Studio was a lifeline. It literally was a line into the pit, because the loss of reading was one of the greater bereavements of my sight loss. And I loved it. Absolutely amazing. And because, as I mentioned, my wife is dyslexic, she finds it easier to process language that she hears than language that she sees, because she says the words pop like popcorn and skip about like a flea circus, which sounds awfully fun, but not very productive. And so we would listen to the books together, and it's like having a very, very intimate book club, which was glorious. Actually, some of the most fun I've ever had reading anything. And got some really wonderful books in the book library. Now, the disadvantage of talking books, and particularly when I was ill, is when you fall asleep, the pages keep turning. And you've got no idea. But, you know, you work, you cope, it's all right, you get there. But I used to find it very exciting, you know, finishing a book, turning the label over, sending it back, and I get another present. I mean, it did feel like a compensation present. It really felt wonderful.
I couldn't agree more. Hearing the snap of the letterbox and just knowing that your next book was waiting for you is just something I really miss.
When I was living in the north of England, we lived in a beautiful Georgian millworker's cottage, attached, terraced. With no central heating, there was a solid fuel fire in the basement, and that heated the whole house. And the two sounds that made me really happy, one was the snap of the letterbox and a new audiobook, and then the thunder of the coal being poured into the coal hole. So then I knew I was going to be cozy and I was going to be able to travel in my mind. Yeah, that was wonderful. The next few weeks were taken care of. The match of narrator to text is key.
So I also noticed that one of the books you've recorded for the RNIB is How to Enjoy a Happy and Healthy Retirement. But I believe also that you have no plans for retirement yourself. You've got quite an exciting summer coming up.
I do. I have no plans for retirement because I don't imagine I will ever have what you might call a pension. So I intend to keep on going. I will be in the corner of a storytelling club one day, smelling slightly of deep heat lotion, and somebody will go, "Who's that? Oh, he's a storyteller." Or at least he was. He still thinks he is. I'll keep on going.
And a trip to Venice is in the offing, I believe, as well?
This is very exciting. My wife is an artist, a visual artist. And she is taking part in her second independent show at the Venice Biennale. It's a show organised by a London-based curator called Vanya Balog. It's called Empire 2, and it's taking place in a palazzo somewhere or other in Venice. And Vanya has asked a group of artists to contribute three-minute films. Now, these are not professional filmmakers, so he wanted it specifically to be like that because he thought they will come up with some interesting and unusual solutions because they've not done this before. And these films have now been edited together into a series of loops which will be displaying on different screens inside this palazzo. And during the private view, I'm going to be, because of the cinema theme, taking a classic of Italian cinema, which is Divorzio all'Italiana, which is Divorce Italian Style by Pietro Germi, and I'm going to reverse engineer it, to turn it back into a spoken word story.
Because, of course, all stories began as spoken word stories.
All storytelling begins with spoken word stories. I mean, this particular story was not originally a traditional story, though many films are. I mean, you know, King Arthur is back, Beauty and the Beast comes back every few years. Shrek is based on a traditional story, the first Shrek. It's based on the marriage of Gawain. And the structure of Divorce Italian Style is, it's a classic quest structure, but because things keep going wrong for the protagonist, it's a comedy. And it is, it's very funny.
My thanks to Giles, and we'll be hearing more from him in future shows.